Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
But this place is different. Special. The others don't want to talk about it because it scares them. But we all know it. We all feel it.
Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez and my dream father wears royal purple shoes.
My name is Joanna Robinson and my dream ghost dead father, guess, wears red tennis shoes.
And I'm Neil Miller and the hallucination of my dead father wears green Air Jordans.
Ooh.
The Air Jordans part is for me.
Specific.
Good news, guys. We got through the boring start of Lost. We're deep into the good episodes. We just finished Walkabout last week. This week we're doing episode 5, White Rabbit. This is your first time and you waited for, you know, Locke's and Jack's like seminal monologues before jumping onto the series. Let me tell you, we do this podcast in two different sections. That's right. The first section is called The Calm. It's for people that have never watched Lost before and only want to go with us through the current episode, episode 5, White Rabbit. We're only going to talk about things up through White Rabbit, and we're not going to speculate too much because we do know what happens. Lost the series came to a conclusion after season 6. All that stuff we're going to talk about in the second part of the podcast in a section we call The Storm, where we get to talk about everything that this episode sets off, references, etc. This week, Joanna, we have a new part to the podcast. Would you like to explain how The Storm is going to evolve going forward?
Yeah, I forgot to ask Neil, who is our expert on naming things, to give me a catchy little name for it. He'll come up with something eventually. But for right now, basically what we want to do to sort of enhance our rewatch is bring in perspective. You know, Lost is a story told from many people's different perspectives. So we thought we would bring in some other perspectives of some of our friends who are culture writers who have maybe some thoughts about the TV series Lost, to come on and chat with us about certain episodes. I've been like going around asking all of our friends, who's your favorite character? Okay, come on for that person's episode. So this is a Jack episode. So we are going to have maybe the number one Jack, Shepherd lover, Jack Shepherd defender, Kim Renfro, who you might know from her excellent Game of Thrones coverage, is going to come on the show. So we're going to have, sort of an edited down version of my conversation with Kim is going to pop up here between The Calm and The Storm in this episode. And then if you are a Patreon subscriber, at what is it? The $5 level? I believe.
I think this one's the small council level.
Ooh, $10. $10 will get you the unedited, in conversation with Kim, including maybe some dogs barking in the background, but also, a lot of our all of our stormy thoughts are going to be in that, conversation and some literary allusions and all kind of stuff. I had a great conversation with Kim about this episode. If you want to hear the full thing, $10. We'll get you there. But if you are just a regular old listener, and we love you guys too, you will hear sort of a pared down version midway through this episode.
I have a great $10 name for this segment, but it's a huge spoiler, so we have to wait a couple weeks.
Yeah, maybe we should start naming these like Patreon exclusive segments after old Game of Thrones things. So like, if you want the full Jon Royce hot goss, join at the Jon Royce level, $10. That was about a show that this podcast used to be about, Game of Thrones. Maybe you've heard of it. Joanna, now that we're a Lost podcast, do we have reviews for this Lost rewatch podcast?
We do, actually. All right, so we have some. Thank you guys all for like the lovely reviews you've left. We have a few positive reviews and some negative. I'm going to read like one negative and then constructive, I would say. And then we're going to do a positive. So this one is from, Cabri. 2 stars, wish the hosts would get it together. I was excited to hear after Game of Thrones wrapped up, the show would go back and revisit Lost. However, 3 episodes in, the podcasts are disordered and confusing with each host seemingly talking at random about different things and no attempt at coherence or logically moving from one topic or scene to the next. Also, there are constant references to the commentary on DVD set, fan websites, and sometimes deleted scenes, none of which seem to me relevant to the experience of the show as it existed. Love the show. Love what these hosts did with Game of Thrones. Wish they could get it together on Lost. So to Kay, I would say I agree with some and disagree with others. We are still working on the format of the show. This is like the first time we've done a rewatch podcast. So we're still figuring out sort of what works format wise there. So we are taking all constructive feedback. And I've heard a lot of you say you want a little bit more structure. So we're going to add a little bit of extra structure to the episode. So thank you for that feedback. As in terms of the extras, like the DVD commentary and the fan websites, that is relevant to, I think, to the full experience of revisiting sort of a pop culture artifact. So I would disagree with that aspect of the review, but I hear you on the structure. And, just like George R.
Martin, my fun facts feel personally attacked.
No, I like all your fun facts. I love your fun facts. So, I think that is relevant. We are trying to contextualize the show, in the years that it premiered. And, also I love learning all the filmmaking stuff from Neil's, commentary revisiting. And then I will end with a 5-star review, a perfect storm from Dan 007 Man. Sometimes I feel like it should be ashamed to say that Lost is my favorite TV show ever. Living through the podcast form explosion that the show created was the most fun and exhilarating television experience I have ever had. Thank you for this project, which I hope will end up validating my feelings about the show. All these years later, I still feel like we may not have gotten the ending we wanted. It was the ending we needed. I trust you three will land this Lost plane successfully. I'll be along for the ride. So thanks, Dan. Thank you all for your reviews. If you leave reviews for us on iTunes, we love that. If you want to drop us a 5-star and give us constructive feedback, we love that even more. So thank you all for listening and reviewing.
All right. We're going to try to get even further into this podcast without bleeping out any spoilers after this message.
I have a question for you fellas. If you were a still young but somewhat aging rock star and you were headed to an island and wanted to impress a cute pregnant Australian chick, would you just start combing what's left of your hair greasily over your forehead? Is that how you would handle a receding hairline? Or what would you do in a desert island receding hairline situation?
I'm not really sure what I would do.
Well,
you got to get those boar hairs, right, and form some sort of mud paste. And just do the best you can to get a little boar hair toupee.
Would I be trying to sneak through Sawyer's stash to see if there's any meds in there that would help?
Yeah, that might be what like a man of faith might go with boar hair and mud, but a man of science would know that thanks to science, baldness can be optional. We just want to bring you a message from our sponsor, Hims.
For Hims, everybody.
So for Hims, one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness for men. Sawyer has a whole lot of Hims in his stash, I am sure of it. There's no waiting room, obviously, on an island. No awkward in-person doctor visits. You can save hours by going to forhims.com. So easy.
Actually, this is important is to think about before you crash on an island. So a lot of you guys have trips coming up. It's the summer season. Now's the time to not become one of the 66% of men who lose their hair by 35. But Four Hymns, everybody! FourHymns.com.
And I mean, like, you definitely don't want to be Locke, who definitely has to slather a lot of sunblock on top of his head at all times. On the, like, the amount of sunblock that John Locke must go through on that island is staggering. So, you know, get with him. Get with the program.
It's not snake oil pills. It's not gas station counter supplements. Neil, tell John Locke what he can do.
Well, if John Locke listens to our Lost podcast and is one of our listeners, they can get a trial month of Hymns for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details and safety information. This will cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. So go to forhims.com/storm. That's forhims.com/storm. Forhims.com/storm.
Forhims, everybody! Neil, it's time for found signals, emails, and such from our listeners about Lost. What do you have for us this week?
Oh, I got a bunch of emails that are going to be useful. Few from our friends out there. A lot of folks are sending in their stories about how they started with Lost, so I want to go through a couple of them because they're great. The first one is an email from Ash, aka Warpstone. Just want to say that I could listen to you all talk endlessly about any topic you guys love. The Slack you have created is a great little place on the internet. Looking forward to more movie club watches with everyone. Also looking forward to the Infinite Storm and everything in the future. Was so happy to see you didn't put Storm of Spoilers to bed, as it is my favorite podcast. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And also, this is a great time to remind you that if you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, you can get into our Patreon, where we have all kinds of fun new things. Joanna mentioned the interview segments. There's also Dave's iconic and in-depth Lost notes that you get access to, and the movie club, and all kinds of other stuff that we're planning. The one that I wanted to focus on this week, though, is that, so we're doing Storm Chasing as our bonus episodes, but once a month, one of those episodes is going to be a choose your own storm adventure where the small council will participate in selecting and voting on the topic. So that is happening this coming week. In between now and when our next episode drops next week, we will be deciding what the topic will be for that final storm chasing bonus episode of this month, which is June. And so get in there now, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Thanks, Warpstone, for the setup to the plug. Next, email from Sherry. Thank you for doing this rewatch. Lost is a special show for me as it brought me and my sister together. We didn't have anything in common, or so we thought, until Lost came out and we could listen to podcasts and theorize together endlessly. I'm loving watching one episode a week as well. It's fun having something to look forward to on Thursday evenings. I have always loved the ending, even though season 6 as a whole is a bit odd. I think you guys are great, and once I figure out my Apple password, I'll give you a 5-star rating. Thank you, and good luck with your Apple password.
Yes, fair. fair dilemma.
Yeah, been there. All right, next one. This is an email from Beth in Kansas. Love the pod. Keep up the great work. Can't wait for Con of Thrones this year. I will forever be mortified that I asked Neil where his sword was in Dallas while we were taking a picture. It wasn't awkward for me, at least not that I remember. Anyway, Beth says, please erase that from memory. But no, we're leaving it in. I was starstruck by my faves. What I actually wanted to tell you, Lost was the first TV show I actively talked about with people. It aired the fall I went to college, and my dad and I both started watching. We would talk about it when I called home and would watch it together when I was home on breaks. I stopped watching for some reason, probably because I didn't have a DVR. Did that even exist in 2005? Hard to say.
TiVo did.
Or TiVo did. Yeah, but TiVo was like a really
up there
luxury. Yeah.
Boop, boop.
Or didn't have cable anymore. I'm so looking forward to having you guys to watch it with. Dad says it got too weird. I'm still going to tell him about it, though, and I'm so glad my tendency to nerd out about my favorite things has become such a big part of my life. Thank you, Beth. Thank you also for the reminder that Con of Thrones is coming up. I believe they have extended the tickets for Con of Thrones, so if you're listening to this in real time, as in June, you still have some time to get your tickets and come see us. We're doing a bunch of panels. They're going to be fun. All right. Last one. Email from James. James says, very happy that I have a reason to rewatch Lost. It's probably my favorite show ever. And I am in, quote, the finale was good, everyone was wrong, and a lot of people I talked to seem to have misinterpreted what happened on the show, unquote, camp. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out now. This will be my third time through the show, with my last rewatch coming pretty shortly after the show ended. I don't have anything particularly interesting to say or any unified theory of Lost to share. It's goes for both of us. But I wanted you to know that I appreciate what you're doing and I appreciate the show Lost. In place of a theory about Lost, I will share a personal reflection, if that's okay with you. I think part, most, or most, of my love of Lost comes from the fact that it was the first, quote, serious TV show that I followed closely. I was in middle school when it first aired. I started watching a couple episodes into the first season with my mom and sister. And for me, that may have been too young to start watching this show. That version of me was terrified by a lot of the show. Just the mention of on the last podcast was enough to creep me out completely. I think one reason I have such a connection to this show is that I was terrified by a lot of the early seasons. I had nightmares about but as the show went on, I grew to be able to handle it, or it just got less scary. So part of this rewatch that will be interesting to me is how scary it is to me and whether I can tell if the show gets less creepy as it goes on.
That was
I'm
great.
Also
that,
pretty
I love that.
Fascinated.
I love that unspoilery email that you just read.
No, it was bleeped out. We just bleeped out all the scary parts like we would for any listeners. Aww. Who, you know, we don't want to be too scary before we get there. This episode is not scary at all, right?
No.
Not at all. It's totally simple episode.
Nothing weird happens in this one.
Wait. No. I have a quick question for you, Dave. I want to ask you this quickly before we get to what's coming next, before I forget, which is like you said, okay, we're past the boring episodes. We're into an interesting episode. You think the first four episodes of Lost are boring? That
was very much a joke.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know.
I was going to say too. I also flagged that as
what?
We need to come back and talk about this. Yeah. For a second.
All right. So we gotta amp up the voices for the humor on the Dave side, where we'll be right back for the most boring episode of The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast, because it has some of my favorite speeches. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, do you think it's like a good idea in order to keep fit to go swimming in like dangerous, choppy riptides in an ocean right off an island every morning?
No, absolutely not. That is especially dangerous if your name is Joanna, as we learned this
week. Yeah, I don't think Joanna should do that. I think Joannas and other people should instead check out Open Fit. Getting fit and staying healthy always sounds easier than done, right? Poor drowned Joanna on Lost? I think so. So OpenFit is bringing you something new that makes it even easier to never miss a sweat session. Lose the commute to the gym and let the workouts come to you.
Even if you're on a beach, you can have access to amazing trainers and classes. You can sculpt your body with Andrea Rogers. She's the founder of the worldwide sensation Extend Bar. Or get in crazy good shape with Hunter McIntyre, named by Sports Illustrated as one of the top 50 fittest athletes. You might even get Sawyer, who will show you how to chain smoke in the shade and somehow stay ripped.
Do you think if Kate was a real person, she would be on the 50 fittest people list of Sports Illustrated? She's very fit, and she's very good at climbing.
Her arms are all the
really
goals.
Good shoulders.
Yeah.
Just top three hottest felon.
You know, provided once again that you can get a signal on your desert island, you can access OpenFit anywhere, anytime, via on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, and those island Rokus. You get the results you can see. Lose up to 15 pounds in just the first 30 days. Flatten your abs, shape your body, and look and feel great.
I feel like if I was on an island, I would do the yoga programs because I would need to chill out. My anxiety would be going absolutely crazy, even though the beach is very nice.
Yes, OpenFit has changed the way we work out, and with our code STORM, you could join us on a fitness journey personalized just for you. Again, use our code STORM and start using OpenFit for your journey to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-Day Challenge, our listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit, where you can lose up to 15 pounds in 30 days when you text STORM to 303030. You'll get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts and nutrition information to totally free. Again, just text STORM to 303030303030. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Stay out of the water.
Joanna, no, not out of it.
We lost Joanna.
Okay, we are now in the comms section, and this is the part of the podcast where we listen to your feedback and give you a little structure. So for you people who are binging ahead, no shame in a binge watch, that's fine. But if you need a refresher on what happened in this episode, Neil Miller is here with some important information about the episode White Rabbit.
Yes, and it's important to note before I start this that this is what you guys asked for, so congratulations.
Did it to yourself.
White Rabbit, here we go. In flashback, we learn that Jack's hero complex is on the rise. We also learn that Jack's father is a total dick, and that Jack's father is missing in Australia. And then, eventually, that Jack's father is dead. But for some reason, he's walking around the island. Speaking of the island, someone named Joanna goes for an early morning swim and then dies. Jack then begins chasing his dead father through the jungle, and his very clean kicks for somebody who's walking around the jungle. Claire later passes out, but not before telling Kate that she's into astrology. Flag that one. Jack falls down, gets saved by Locke. Then they chat about some island magic without ever talking about the fact that Locke was in a wheelchair before they crashed. Jack finds water and an empty coffin and isn't really seem very happy about either one of them. Then later we learn that Boone is the one who stole what left of the camp's water. This prompts Jack to step in and give his big live together, die alone speech. And then everyone is inspired not to die. I pretty much think that's it.
That sums it up.
Pack it in from here. Yeah,
that is. That was a good, not a judgmental. once again, I'm working on changing my timbre to better signal things. This is our first Lost episode to start with a flashback, right?
Yes.
So we start with a child's eye, and you're like, what's going on? Is there a white kid around? The answer is no. We're in a flashback. Because we're back to a Jack episode. We've sensed the pilot. Pilot had flashbacks to the plane, figured it out. Then we had a Kate episode, and we're like, oh, maybe these episodes are going to include things without the plane. Then we had a Locke episode, and we're like, wait, this is how the series is structured. And now we're back to Jack before, I think, going out to some of our supporting characters on the island. So a lot of island work here done with our characters. I think Boone is more complicated. I think obviously Charlie and Claire are more complicated, but this episode is also about setting up Jack and Locke, I think, sort of as the two main leaders of the island, and I think letting off some of the Saeed and Sawyer and Kate gas we've been pressing on for the few episodes since the pilot. Joanna, this episode is leaning even more into the mystical, which sort of was the reveal, I think, at the end of Walkabout. So now that we know that the island's magic, how did you enjoy Jack Shepherd's first reckoning with it?
I think it's great. I think this idea of Jack being, like, to contrast this with Locke's reaction, which is just, like, giddy excitement, and Jack instead confused, frustrated, self-diagnosing, you know, all this sort of stuff. That scene where he and Locke sit down and he's trying to be like, I'm going crazy, or like, I'm sleep deprived, or I'm all these other things. And Locke is like, what if it's something else? And Jack's like, no, man of science.
Magic.
Man of science. No. So Jack's reaction to all of that, is fantastic. I think the, you know, each, I talked about how I think the flashbacks exist to, you know, provide empathy and insight for these characters. And I don't know that we necessarily needed that for Jack, but I guess it's insight into Jack's, like, wound, why Jack is the way he is, why he needs to solve all these things, fix all these things all the time. And so that, you know, that coexists. His search for his father, both the emotional search and the physical search to Australia, is a nice parallel with his search for his ghost dad on this island. Ghost dad is usually, my least favorite TV trope, but this is my favorite ghost dad of all time, Christian Shepherd. So welcome to Lost, Christian Shepherd. You are the exception that proves the rule of ghost dads on TV shows for me.
Neil, I think we get right at the start of the episode, we lose poor Joanna out in the water. And Jack, we're still pre-titles. Jack has to make a similar decision to the one when the little kid is getting the crap beat out of him in the flashback, and decides to rescue Boone instead, which sort of sets off Boone's complex. I'm going to start you off with our Shannon Boone check-in this week, which is mostly Boone and one scene of Shannon. Where are we tracking this sort of shadow Jack, who seems to want to be the leader every time Jack doesn't want to, and really it gets him into trouble this episode?
Well, I think they do a good job in this episode of using Boone to sort of represent the panic, like to represent the panic that everyone's sort of going through, that as they're running out of water, you know, as Jack asks Locke when they sit down, like, oh, how is everybody? He's like, they're thirsty. And they're hungry and they're all tired and they're all kind of losing it. We're on what, day 6 on the island. So I think Boone is a representative of sort of everyone just having sort of a weird time with this. And, yeah, we get a little bit of, this one is sort of an interesting episode because it's an early episode where we don't get a ton of everybody else. We get these little bits and bites and a lot of things that sort of, the show can come back to later, I guess. But, yeah, I think, there's not a whole lot to Boone here. Unless the, what do you think about Boone? I feel like you have a Boone thing.
Oh, I think that, well, he got corrected by Jack in the pilot when he was giving Rose mouth to mouth incorrectly. And ever since then has, like, wanted to be in that position of authority. But for whatever reason, obviously now people won't accept him because, as Sawyer says at the end of the episode, he's at the top of the most hated list. But I think that his, like, want to be accepted and to be in some sort of control is the most... It's a very believable position for a lot of our characters to be in. I think also Kate and Saeed and are also in that same mindset, but Boone just goes about it so erratically because I think he's the one that hasn't got over whatever trauma he's dealing with yet, which we'll get to.
Well, they all haven't gotten over whatever trauma they're dealing with. Yeah. I think it's that, I mean, one of the things that I would say is I think it's just that Boone doesn't have the skill set that Jack has. And there's also that, like, that old Game of Thrones dynamic of, like, Jack is best suited to lead because he doesn't want to lead, right? I don't really want anymore. Boone wants it so badly that he's kind of bad at it. And yeah, I like you calling him a shadow Jack. I like that a lot. I think that's true, that he's like, he really wants to be the Jack and he's just not the Jack at all.
No, nope. So, yeah. He wish he had all those skills and he wishes his decisions were right, but they're just not quite there yet.
Yeah.
So we also have, I'm trying to go a little bit more chronologically, we have Sun and Jin. We check in with them. Son's watching Michael and Walt, because Son has taught Walt how to brush his teeth, which is very nice thing to teach the child. And she has a conversation with Jin where they're basically setting up, Son thinks someone needs to tell them all what to do, and Jin takes that as like, I'll tell you what to do, there's no need to necessarily ingratiate yourself with these people. Which isn't necessarily wrong at this point, pre-live together, die alone speech, and with this water shortage going on. But I do think it's a good example of using characters that nobody understands to speak to the audience. So when Locke later on in the episode is talking to Jack through his like crisis of faith, and he says, you know, people are looking for someone to tell them what to do, it becomes a lot more basic about looking for comfort than it does about like making the right choice. And I think that's a very important distinction for Jack to make, at the end because he doesn't, you know, have what it takes, but he does have enough to take just to tell people what to do. Like, he can appreciate that order. Am I off on that?
No, I don't think you're off. I think what's challenging in this Sun and Jin scene, and this is something I did want to address with like our con listeners, people who are watching for the first time. I've had a lot of people say like, I'm really uncomfortable with the depiction of the Korean couple on this show. And it's really hard to talk about Sun and Jin to first time watchers without spoiling anything for them. So I, you know, something that I've been saying to some of our Patreon subscribers in our Slack channel, and something I will say to listeners is like, if you're watching Lost for the first time and you're uncomfortable with Sun and Jin, I would encourage some patience. Something that we've been talking about more broadly on this podcast is like the idea of Lost is, you know, flashbacks reveal, layers of characters that they are kind of intentionally hiding from you at the beginning. And in some cases, like maybe leaning too hard on intentionally hiding things from you. And so, patience is a virtue when it comes to the Kwans. And also, next week's episode is called The House of the Rising Sun. So, you don't have to wait too long for a little more info. But I just want to let you guys know that like, we are not cool. We're not like, Lost is a great show. Don't you love how this Korean man is completely domineering of his wife? And isn't it great? Like, there's stuff coming, I promise, with that. So just be patient and we'll get there. So.
There's actually a really nice shot framing in this Sun thing that spotlights as foreshadowing the way we're going to kick off next week's episode, which I think is not the first time, but the first time it jumped out at me during this rewatch of the show. You know, not only are we're returning to Jack and we're doing in this flashback structure, which sort of could feel like a step back, but they are starting to see these other stories and where they're going to go. I'm comfortable mentioning that Sun one in the column because it's going to be next episode, but there's another one in the storm that we're going to have to definitely talk about.
Ooh.
All right.
Wait. No, I just want to say really quickly, I agree. Like when I was watching this episode, I was like, the Sun episode is next. Like I was like, I can see how this is like next time on Lost. Let's deal with Sun and Jin. So yeah, there you go.
Is anybody here into astrology enough to know that if Kate being a Gemini is super important, or is it just...
I have a story about this.
All right.
My roommate, whose birthday was this past weekend, Kim, we were watching this episode together, and as soon as Claire said, "You're a Gemini," Kim goes, "I knew it. They're Gemini." It's a Gemini thing. So it's like... I don't know if there's any greater significance to it, but it's like, that's such a Kate thing to be a Gemini.
That's so interesting.
Like,
I know what it like, cause I'm a Libra. I know, like, if someone's like, so-and-so's a Libra on the show, like Hurley's a Libra. If someone was like, Hurley's a Libra, I'm like, yeah, he is. Hurley is a Libra. I know more about Gemini men than I knew about Gemini women. So I don't know. No, I don't know. But if you are listening and have thoughts about Gemini women and why Kate falls into that category, you do email us, StarWarsSpoilers@gmail.com. I would love to read your Kate as a Gemini take.
Someone do her star chart.
Yes.
Do the Kate star chart. All right, let's see. Jack sees Christian in the water, which leads him into the jungle where he will be for the remainder of the episode until he has the speech because he found fresh water. But Kate doesn't see Jack at all, which means this is
Christian. Yeah.
Magic.
Yeah.
Which last week's episode, I had to sort of talk around. There might be someone wandering out in the desert from maybe that we hadn't seen before. But no, this is a man in a suit that is now the actor that we see in flashbacks, just so he could connect it. This is Jack's dad walking around the island. He's going to chase him around, but we get very specific dreamlike chase scenes through the jungle, often kicked off by like a sound cue. There's a nice little scotch ice jingling that kicks it off later on.
Wait, that might be even a better prompt that we should have done at the beginning instead of dream tennis shoes. Not to like nag your choice, Dave, but like, what would be the sound effect that like kicked off a visitation from your ghost dad? Mine would be yelling at the Raiders or the Oakland A's. That would be my like dad sound. Be like,
yeah, mine would be gonna get a haircut.
Mine would be the sound of someone hitting a golf ball with a golf club.
All right.
Ooh,
yeah.
Yours is the creepiest, laying in some mystery. Also the most pleasant. Yeah, like it's like not yelling, but also would creep the shit out of me. Yeah.
I love that. I love the ice glass tinkle. Well, there's the sound of the clicking ice, and there's also, I think we get some of that clicking sound that we've heard on the island before. I think we get that as well. We'll talk about that in the storm. Yeah, John Terry, the actor John Terry plays Christian Shepherd, and I love him in this role. I love Christian Shepherd. So, can I ask you guys a question though? Given that like a lot of our heroes on the show have daddy issues, this is a thing that Lost loves to talk about. And I think eventually gets,
it's almost like the people who made it are big Spielberg fans or something.
Like eventually gets really good at, but what do you think of this first like Christian Shepherd, young Jack Shepherd scene? Where we have Jack Shepherd with a black eye, a nice little like eye motif thing. And then Christian being like, you just are ill-equipped to be a hero, son. Like to me, it feels like a little heavy-handed. Dave, does this first one where Christian has this like terrible hair dye, situation, does that work for you? What do you think of it?
It's hard for me because specifically in this episode, both of Jack's parents come off like assholes because we're with Jack on the island and they're very specifically tying flashbacks, even to just lines, which they don't necessarily usually do. There's a like yelling, where are you in the jungle, that then becomes a where are you in the flashback. So we're so in Jack's mindset when we go back into the flashback that his dad and his mom are assholes. But if you step back and think about, guy whose son just came home and got like the shit beat out of him, maybe you just have a bad parenting moment. You're just like, I need to stop him from making these dumb decisions that are going to get his head kicked in by like the young neo-Nazis I know live down the street. And just tell him to toughen up a little bit. I think though, as we continue on through the series and get to see the thing that, Jack's, mother references, that he did to sort of wrong his father, the relationship gets more complex. But yes, both parents play as an asshole in this episode, but I only think it's because this episode's so good at putting us in Jack's frame of mind, being tired, having just let somebody die. He knows they're low on water and like maybe he's going insane. Yeah, it makes everybody an asshole. But like, am I going to tell my kid they can do anything? Like, that seems like equally as dangerous. If you know they're going to get trapped on a mystical island, which you don't, I guess you don't.
Yeah. I think all of it is a little over the top. Like I watched a child your age die and then later came home, watched some, what does he say? I watched the Carol Burnett show.
Yeah.
And decided
belly laughs
and decided that you're basically worthless. That's clink, terrible.
Clink ice in my glass of my self-medication.
Yeah.
Like that's
terrible pep talk.
Yeah. And Christian's being like such a hypocrite here because he's like, I can do all this stuff and it doesn't affect me. Swig, swig, swig of my scotch. I'm fine. This is fine. I have what it takes. You don't, sort of thing. So
yeah,
I
mean,
he's allowed to drink scotch. He has what it takes.
I guess.
I mean, that maybe not, but that's okay.
I will say that it really does make, and this is why I think Jack sort of overwhelms this episode, which if there's anything sort of this episode, well, I don't know, it's not necessarily a bad thing at all, because the speech that he gives the person at the counter in the airport is
so
incredible.
Good. So good.
And it's this incredibly like desperate low moment, and then we see him, you know, I think immediately he's like crying, and then that's where he sort of picks up the scent again, or that's when the ghost dad comes back to him, is sort of at his lowest moment, which is super interesting. And I think that a lot of the flashback stuff would have felt way too heavy-handed if Matthew Fox doesn't just bring this thing home unbelievably well in the two speeches he gives at the end are just great.
I think that's right.
There are a couple good speeches in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we jump to the Locke speech? Because I love it.
We can, of course. And after that, I'm going to play another round of the most 2004 thing about this episode. But yes. First, hit me with the Locke speech, Dave.
Crazy people don't know they're going crazy. They think they're going sane after Locke says that, pay attention to everything he says because it's fantastic. Not only is it a lot of it in our intro, but it's Locke talking metatextually about the series in one of those ways where he does, but it also seems perfect in the moment. Locke is my favorite character, if we haven't picked that up, at least in this first season. In The Calm, it might be more evident that I like Locke than in The Storm, but it is great to know that we're here for a purpose. Here on the island, and that people only had superficial injuries for a reason, and that what if everything was true, because he's looked into the eye of this beautiful island. I love that beginning. I love Locke having to talk Jack into faith before Jack has to then logic all over it by crying out with his ghost dad. I really like the setup of this moment where Jack thinks he's breaking, and it is the person who says the crazy thing as if he's sane, which is, by definition, what makes a person crazy, that sort of talks down the doctor. One of my favorite scenes of the first season.
It's a really good scene. I'm hesitant around, like, some of the use of crazy and sane, and, like, you know, when we're not talking about, I don't know, it's a sensitive subject, but executed so well by Terry O'Quinn. And this, like, constant dynamic. This is why, like, you and I have been, like, struggling going back and forth about how we define Locke and Jack on this show, mostly in The Storm. So, like, this might be new to the Calm folks. But, like, this episode is where I think the word foil works really well for the two of them. You know what I mean? When we get Locke's reaction to the island so close to Jack's reaction to the island, and then this conversation, and, like, even the shot of the two of them, like, lying on the ground together before, like, Jack starts laughing, like, his head off. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, like, that shot feels important, or the hand out over the cliff feels important. Like, all of this Jack and Locke stuff feels really important in this episode. Neil?
All right.
Yes. Oh, that sounds very...
Right. Is it time for another round of what is the most 2004 thing about this episode?
Absolutely.
I feel like we should, like, what should be the music cue of 2000? Something from, like, the OC or something like that. The theme song to the OC. Imagine that's playing underneath me as I say this. All right. Is it the way that Boone's stylish 2004 mullet flaps in the breeze? Is it the way that Jack wears his sweatshirt over his overcoat in a sort of Dogma Kevin Smith fashion? Is it the background actress with the striped crop top rugby shirt, Abercrombie and Fitch look, who I've now seen in two episodes? Look for her. It's a blue striped rugby shirt. I hope she has it on next week as well. Or is it Shannon's? I mean, it's always Shannon, but is it Shannon's Paris Hilton-esque tennis skirt ensemble that gets her the light sticks sort of reference from Sawyer? What is the most 2004 thing about this episode?
I'm going with Shannon's outfit only because only in 2004 would you be like, that is the outfit of a rich person, which is what Sawyer thinks.
I also want to go with Shannon's, but because it's good to see someone do some grammar stuff. And so when Sawyer goes light, comma, sticks, it's always such a great moment. Because Sawyer, the whole thing about Sawyer so far is they're just like, just be a piece of shit about everything. And he's really good at it.
If you want to hear my thoughts about why Sawyer is reading what he's reading in this episode, you can listen to my conversation with Kim Renfro, because that is something that we talked about. But Watership Down makes its first appearance in this episode, and I don't know, maybe Lost Book Club will be a segment on this, but we talked about why Watership Down makes sense for Lost. So there you go.
All right, here are the three things I want to hit on before we go into the storm. One, resolution of the water plot with the people on the beach. Two, Jack finds the caves. And three, live together, die alone. Joanna, you have in your notes, there's some misidentifying of our Asian friends in all this accusatory talk about maybe Sawyer stealing the water. Is this really Hurley's fault? Or are we just supposed to, is this shorthand for Hurley's dumb? Misidentifying, sorry, Sun and Jin is Chinese. He says that, you guys can't see the notes.
Well, he says the Chinese couple, which is better than Sawyer saying Mr. Miyagi. So, like, I feel like Hurley is just genuinely, like, doesn't, like, that's, there's two different kinds here, right? There's, like, if Hurley knew, he would not have misidentified. And Sawyer just being a dick, as per usual. So, two different things there. And then I do like, that later, like just a few minutes later, Saeed gets it. He's like, the Koreans. Like, so Saeed gets it correct. We are not dealing with Japanese people or Chinese people. The Kwan's a Korean. And I like, we'll talk about this a little bit more in the storm, but, one of my favorite Saeed things in this episode. We'll talk about it in the storm, but it has to do with the Kwans. So, there's that. And there's also, speaking of like, two things. Number one, we've gotten some feedback from people that they're a little upset that we haven't talked more about the fact that, Naveed Andrews, a British-born Indian man, is playing an Iraqi character. Not all brown people are the same. Like, should they have hired an actual, like, Iraqi or someone of Iraqi descent to play this character? Probably yes, absolutely. And I promise you we're going to talk a lot more about Saeed, and especially about the way that Naveen Andrews speaks a different language in his episode a little later on this season. So we're going to get to that. And then the last sort of atrocity that this episode commits against non-Americans is a bad Australian accent alert. This is something that I want to flag as a potential the Storm rewatch drinking game rule. If you like, Emily DeRaven is Australian. She sounds fine as Claire. Most of the other people in the Australian flashbacks, at least in this like first season, are not Australian, and you can really tell. And I think the hotel clerk is the most egregious example in this episode. We got an email from Nicole who was like, I didn't notice the first time I watched 7 years ago, but this watch through, it physically hurts me. And she talks about a really, really bad example that happens later. So, drink when a definitely a non-Australian tries to do an Australian accent on Lost.
And the reason why that is because Hawaii stand, the like cities in Hawaii stand in for a lot of Australia.
Right.
So, also apparently they still didn't have a ton of money, even though it was a fairly popular show by now.
Yeah. There's that other shot where when Jack goes over the cliff and he looks up and it's like definitely his stunt double. You guys clocked that? It reminded me of that shot in Jurassic Park when Lex falls through the like ceiling and she looks up,
right,
and they just and like
just CG out her face.
Yeah, CG painted her face over. They didn't even bother. They're just like, that's a different guy. But don't worry, Matthew Fox is here for other shots of grabbing vines and looking over his shoulder. It's fine. This is fine.
Back when that happened at Jurassic Park, we were appreciative and stunned that they would go to the lengths to cut out a stuntman's face and put a little girl's face over it. How times have changed. All right. Jack finds the caves after following the clinking ice of Ghost Dad. In the caves, he finds some dolls and his dad's coffin, which is empty. Neil.
Oh shit!
Is Ghost Dad a zombie? Is Ghost Dad a zombie?
We have no idea what Ghost Dad is, and that's kind of one of the things that I love about Lost, in especially in this first season, is it can like deliver a weird cliffhanger like that, like holy shit, that dead guy's not there anymore, and then very quickly move on, like to Jack like giving a speech. It's such a fascinating thing to think of these episodes as like they all have their own sort of self-contained mysteries, but they all move the larger story forward, which is, you know, we've talked for the Storm folks about the show Bible essentially that we've been reading out of. And that's one of the things that they did because it was on ABC and it was going to get rerun at weird hours. Like every episode had to have its own sort of self-contained thing. And then what that forces them into are these situations where it's like this huge reveal, and then, oh, we have to go deal with the politics of what's going on at the camp. So I just, it's one of my, and it does, there's, I mean, we're in a real string here of episodes that are going to do stuff like this, and it's so much fun.
Yes, Joanna, we get fresh water, which provides, like Neil was saying, a good enough resolution for Jack for this episode. And he comes back and delivers something we've been saying, I think, in our Slack and whatnot since the rewatch started, but we're finally here. Live together, die alone. It's a famous Lost speech. And he manages to bring the beachgoers together, probably. It seems like Sawyer and Boone might be holdouts at the end of this episode. What do you think about the live together, die alone speech?
Rewatch together, die alone. I don't know. Podcast together, die alone. I love it. What's funny though, and once again, I talked to Kim Renfro about this a bit, is like Jack is so stubbornly self-reliant that him giving this speech of like live together, die alone, is like, hey, rely on each other, rely on me. I'm not really there yet psychologically. I'm not able to accept help from other people. I have to do everything myself. But you guys should definitely rely on each other and rely on me. It'll be better that way, trust me. So, I don't know. I think about, like, I feel bad for Boone in this episode because, like, yeah, stealing the water and then deciding who to give it to was, like, a stupid move. But, like, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Jack does a similar move so often on the show where he's like, don't tell the others, but I'm going to do this. There's no elections
or
on the
I'm
island.
I'm not going to tell everyone that Kate was the one in handcuffs.
Yeah, like he makes all these decisions about what is privileged information, what isn't. You know, like I'm going to take hold. I mean, it makes sense that he takes hold of the medicine, but like, don't tell the others about this. Don't tell the red shirts about this. Like, we're the leaders and we decide and that sort of stuff. And so like Boone thought he was doing that because Jack wasn't doing it. And like, you know, and what's true is like Jack as a leader makes sense and is, and for sometimes and doesn't for other reasons. And Locke makes sense sometimes and doesn't for other reasons. But like, I like when other people occasionally present themselves as like, yeah, why isn't this person the leader? And I feel that way about Saeed a lot. So when Saeed's like, keeping all your water in one place is really stupid. It's like, yeah, maybe Saeed should be in charge. I don't know. He seems like he has a lot of good ideas. So, but it's a great speech. Live together, die alone. It's a great speech. It is, it's a line from a Billy Bragg song. I don't know if that's something people know, but, it's,
I didn't know that.
It's not a Jack original. So, there you go.
Well, it's a lot better than his original thought, which is you need someone to pull you up from that cliff you run over.
Or you need someone to tell you at a very young age that you're not good enough.
You don't have what it takes. Yeah. Wait for someone else to tell you if you have what it takes or not. That's the true moral of Lost.
Yeah. And the Billy Bragg song, The International, the lyrics go, come greet the dawn and stand beside us. We'll live together or we'll die alone in our world poisoned by exploitation. So if you haven't listened to Billy Bragg, that's some great hardcore political songs that I like a lot. But there you go.
Mm, fantastic. Now, before we go into the storm, let's talk to Kim Renfro.
All right. Our very special guest on this episode of The Storm is Insider's entertainment correspondent and Jack Shepherd lover, Kim Renfro. Kim, thank you for chatting with me today.
Hello. I'm so excited to be chatting with you, especially about Jack.
All right. So when we announced that you might know Kim from her excellent Game of Thrones coverage, but as it turns out, she has seen other TV shows as well, not just Game of Thrones. But yeah, when I was sort of reaching out to friends of the pod to say like, who, you know, I've been asking people, who's your favorite character? So I could figure who I could get on for which episode. And I should have known your answer would have been Jack Shepherd, because you are a Jon Snow lover. Do you want to chat like a little bit about what overlap you see between like people who love Jon Snow on Game of Thrones and people who love Jack Shepherd on Lost?
Of course. Yeah. When you texted me that, I was immediately like, oh, I know what my answer is. And I know that, Joanna's going to laugh at me that this is so obviously my answer and it's so on brand. Yeah. I mean, obviously they are like the two sort of sad boy hero complex men of these two different fictional realms. And I mean, people should know by now that, like, you know, the straight white man protagonist is such a cliche in fiction, but it's a cliche because it's been around forever. And for whatever reason, so many people are drawn to these figures, like the whole hero complex and the reluctant hero complex, especially these characters who are sort of forced into situations where they have to shoulder a burden and usually find themselves worthy of it, but they are often the conduit for the audience to kind of get more into the fantastical elements of these stories. And I think that Jack is absolutely that person because, you know, he's our man of science. And Jon Snow is that person in Game of Thrones where, you know, all he wants is to go be a ranger for the Night's Watch. And then all of a sudden he's like a secret king who has to save the world from from White Walkers. And it's like, oh, crap,
right,
this isn't what I wanted. Right. So, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast already that in the initial pitch for the show, the idea was that they would cast someone big as Jack, maybe Michael Keaton, kill him off in the pilot, and then have the audience go, whoa, I thought the white doctor was the hero, but turns out it's Kate. And then the network was like, no, folks, we want that doctor as our protagonist. So, you know, that being said, you know, what do you feel like? Why does Lost need Jack in the end? Like, let's leave aside stupid network reasons why Lost needs Jack. Why do you feel like the story of Lost needs Jack Shepard?
I think he's what grounds us in all of the uncertainty that comes along with the sort of like mystery box that's unfolding in Lost. He's in every way that John Locke, and you guys have talked about this a lot, which is great, is like how he's such a complicated character that kind of presents himself as not a very good guy, but then we dive into him more. And once we get to, you know, walk about and kind of understand a little bit more of where he's coming from, it makes sense why he's responding in the way that he's responding to the island. And Jack is like his foil in every way. And I think that only gets more important as the show goes on, but especially in these first few episodes, he's so key in that he is sort of like, he's more of the everyman. He's obviously a doctor, so he's very talented, but he's not like a Kate who has like, you know, this super interesting criminal background or like, you know, we're introduced to all these like archetypes that I feel like Jack is he's our everyman. And
that's funny. I think of Hurley sort of as more of our everyman. That's Hurley was just like, dude, what? In the way that we hope we all would be, like, beloved, but also like, I'm sorry, what just happened there? But I take your point. And then I wanted to ask you, so, you know, we're going to talk about White Rabbit this episode, which we get like the full Jack backstory, or the beginning of the Jack backstory. And, I actually perversely kind of want to start at the end, which is Jack's very famous speech where he says, you know, live together, die alone. And I wanted to ask you, like, not to get too spoilery about it, and maybe we shouldn't, but like this idea of a leader saying live together, die alone, but Jack is positioning himself in a way where he knows what's best to do. You know, he's telling people what to do. That's the whole thing. It's like, we need someone to tell us what to do. It's going to be Jack because he was the one running around saving everyone when the plane crashed. So he's like our natural leader. He's who we're looking to. But this idea of like Jack's inability to rely on other people, like he has to do it all himself. And then he's asking all these people on the island to rely on each other and live together. And the inherent friction of that as a character choice. Does that make any sense, or is that impossible to talk about in like episode 5 of Lost?
I think we can, because his martyr complex is very evident already. Like you've said, with him running around and having to save everything, and it tracks with the opening of the episode too, when he makes this choice to save Boone and not Joanna. R.I.P. Joanna.
R.I.P. Joanna.
but yeah, I think that that particular kind of martyrdom is important to Jack and to our understanding of how he's going to be a leader moving forward, because they make it kind of clear at the start of the episode that he does have to do that. In his absence, everything kind of starts to go haywire. And so if he's not going to do it, it does seem like things actually would fall apart, because for whatever reason, he tends to have the best problem solving ability so far, I think. That's been my read on it. Like, he usually does have a very good answer, even if the way that he's getting to that answer is often fraught, to say the least.
This is primarily definitely a Jack episode, absolutely. But there's stuff going on with our other characters, too. We've got some, like, Claire and Chally stuff. We've got some Hurley stuff, you know, and Saeed and Kate sort of figuring out their leadership roles. You know, what sticks out for you in the way that the show is able to, I don't know, populate a main storyline with other sub storylines in this particular episode?
Yeah, I especially love the interplay of all the different kind of like prospective leaders, like you said, like, and you guys have been talking about this a lot, about how every episode, like a different kind of almost like candidate presents themselves as like, maybe they're the best person to be taking charge. And I especially love the conversation that Saeed and Kate and Locke have after Jack runs off, and they're all kind of figuring out what to do. And it's Locke who has to be like, well, practically speaking, like, I'm the one who should go try and find water because, you know, you two need to be here for X, Y, and Z reasons. And it's just, it's a really good interplay of all of everyone's different skill sets coming in at different points in the story. And I especially like that by removing Jack from the situation for like, I don't even, he was gone for like a full day, right? And, you know, Claire collapses, and it's like the fact that the show has been able to so quickly get you to understand what everybody's strengths and weaknesses are on this beach and what it means if one of those is suddenly missing and how like the order of operations would have to reshuffle is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. How fragile, mm-hmm. like this little like situation that they've dug out for themselves mm-hmm. is. Yeah, and then okay, so I want to ask you something. This is maybe unfair because I didn't give you any chance to prepare for this question, great. Kim. But something that you do so well in your coverage of TV is something that I like to do too. Is notice book titles and think about book titles and like how they relate to the episodes. This episode has two literary allusions in it, right? We've got obviously the Lewis Carroll White Rabbit, Alice in Wonderland sort of thing. It's not the last time we will see the story of Alice in this crazy mixed up place referred to in the island. And then we also have Watership mm-hmm. Down, which Sawyer is reading. Are you prepared to talk about either of these bunny books? Do you have any thoughts about how they relate to the episode?
I would actually just love to hear you explain Watership Down things to me, because I feel like I read this book when I was younger, and I haven't reread it in ages, but I did, like, something pinged in my brain when I saw that Sawyer was reading that, and I also know that you love Sawyer. So I was like...
I do. As predictable as your love of Jack is, my love of Sawyer and Jamie Lannister's The World is also equally predictable. All right. Watership Down is a story of, you know, a group of rabbits who are driven from their home and trying to find like a new place to sort of live. And it also, you know, kind of like Animal Farm and other things, it deals with this, idea of human leadership or human sociological allegory is told through the lens of bunnies. bunnies will be a very, very big thing, on Lost. But, you know, what's most pertinent to this story is that there's, you know, kind of two main rabbits. There's Hazel, who is the leader, and, his brother Fiver. And Fiver has like visions and, you know, is like dreamily intuitive. And then Hazel is objective and rational, though he still like sort of believes in Fiver's vision. And so this idea of, you alluded to this is a Lost phrase that we, is not a spoiler thing to say, but man of science, man of faith, that Jack is the man of science, Locke is the man of faith, and, you know, Fiverr is the buddy of faith, and Hazel is the buddy of science. So, you know, I think that there's no doubt. I mean, you know, that's exactly who these writers are, these Lost writers are, that they will acknowledge when they're lifting from Watership Down by putting Watership Down in their show. You know what I mean? So, like, acknowledging that. And so I think, thinking about, and like, that's what we will see in Lost. We've talked about this, on the podcast already, but this idea of Lost as like a survivor-esque way to look at sociologically how we exist as a society in different places, on in a cave, on a beach, in other potential locations on the island. Who's doing it the right way? What's the right way to lead? What's the right way to live? What's all of that? So I think that's why Watership Down is in this episode, or Sawyer just like
one of the two. No, I love that. Bunny of Faith is gonna be what I call John Locke now every time I'm talking about Lost.
Buddy of faith, buddy of science. Is there anything else about this episode specifically that you wanted to raise? We might talk about some spoilery other stuff, but anything about this episode you want to?
I just really love Matthew Fox as Jack Shepard. Yeah. I think that he does such a great job of portraying this like very kind of broken and sad person who is really good-hearted and does a really good job of like putting on a face that he presents when he has to like snap into leadership mode. But when you see that facade drop, and especially like in the flashback, we get this when we're first seeing him dealing with his father's death, but it's just such a great performance, and it's really, he really just endeared me to his character. Like, as many qualms and nitpicks and like, you know, further down the line, I'm very excited to see how I feel about Jack in this rewatch, because I haven't rewatched the entire series all the way through. So my like memories of loving Jack are very much rooted in all of my feelings about mostly these early seasons, but like, you know, they're kind of hazy in the when I look back and think about the show. And so I'm wondering if my feelings will change about him as I rewatch it. But as I've just rewatched these first sets of episodes, I'm just reminded of like how wonderfully Matthew Fox brings this character to life. And I just want to give him a little shout out.
And it's time, as we always do, to thank the members of our small council this quarter. If you are a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/snowroomspoilers at the small council or the top level, wherever we're calling it, we read your name once per quarter. Here we go. Thank you very much. TLS, Jesus Martinez, Robin, Max Hellebron, Benjamin Kreichbaumer, Lena Kalik, Sakib, Nicole Wood, Shona Evans, Aditi Doobie, Aaron Conroy, Eric Dornbrook, Olivia Whitehead, Sandra, Anja Dreschler, Alex, Ben Miller, Mark Villalobos, and Tara Pope.
Thank you guys so much. I also want to thank Susan Newman, Jeff Graham, Chad Hamilton, I wonder if Chad Hamilton enjoys the film When a Date with Chad Hamilton. Anyway, When a Date with Chad Hamilton, Philip Anderson, Catherine Peterson, Casey Schonbrunn, so pretty, Jacob Sistrunk, Amber Placha, Bethany Husby, Stephen Beckert, Chad Hanna, Mitchell Scott, Jennifer Holloway, Daniel Keeling, Dan Smith, S.M., Kelsey, Lauren Biscali, and Eric Stratton.
And finally, I would like to thank the following humans: Cody Dixon, Christopher Schnees, Rana, Raquel Azevedo McKenney, John Pinge, Catherine, Janelle E. Erickson, Jessica Caposi, Lisa Beauregard, Kyle Clark, Sydney, Aaron, Danica O'Brien, Camilla Urbina, Corinne, Miranda Lane, Claire C., Alexandra Schultz, Jerry Cacciotti, Jeff Bear, and Laura Mingle.
And it's time for the storm, which I hand over to Joanna because I go too fast into the storm.
And what's even better is this week the storm is going to kick off with a "You're wrong, Dave." No, last week you had mentioned that you thought Christian Shepherd in this episode was a Starbuck, as in like an angel, a non-denominational angel, leading the kids to water. But a listener emailed in, a couple people emailed us in this bit of dialogue from later in the series where the man in black, Jack, should we do a dramatic reading? Does anyone want to do a dramatic reading of the scene with me? No?
Yes.
Yes. Which part do you want to play, Neil?
I'll be Jack.
Great. Go for it.
Who else have you looked like?
Man in black says, Jack, what do you really want to ask me?
The third day we were here, I chased my father through the jungle. My dead father. Was that you?
Yes, that was me.
Why?
You need to find water. This may be hard for you to believe, Jack, but all I've ever been interested in is helping you.
To help me? Do what?
Leave, but because Jacob chose you, you were trapped on this island before you even got here. Now Jacob's dead. We don't have to be trapped anymore. Okay, so either it's the man in black
Huge fucking spoiler for Jacob, by the way.
Or the man in black is lying here. So either one could be true. But
I feel like that was one of the things last week where I was like, I feel like I remember that differently, but I wasn't on firm ground as I was in this dramatic reading.
Excellent.
I'll reverse myself. Only because I'd forgotten that the thing that leads him directly to the cave is when he breaks down, and it makes more sense for my theory that the monster appears at the height of weakness for the character at point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That it's not until... But then again, I'm not completely against the angel thing because... why send him running off a cliff? Or does he just not know that Jack's going to react that way? I'm not 100% against part Jack hallucination in this episode, but I'm with the emailer and the series that he definitely brings him to water in this episode because Man in Black shows up when you're weak.
Great.
It's great. And now he's got an earworm and he's worm tonguing Lost. With his like little flashing thing. Joanna was very nice and sent me a copy of the Lost Encyclopedia, that she had referenced in an earlier episode. And it does talk about when Locke sees the monster at Walkabout that what he sees as beautiful is the monster pulling memories out of his head.
Oh.
So we talked about that last week and what we thought he saw. And canonically, that means that he's interacted with the monster to the point where they're like in some sort of bond, which we're going to see later when he sort of completely trusts it as it drags him around. And I think all cowboys have daddy issues, which is also connected to this episode. The Jack episodes and the Man in Black episodes slowly start intertwining with the Locke episodes until I think, Man of Science, Man of Faith, the beginning of season 2. So this is the beginning of the antagonist narrative, even though it is, Joanna's right, foil's a better word for this particular episode. But I dig it.
I like you using the word worm-tonguing, as in Grim Worm-tongue, to like take up space in someone's head rent-free, as Neil Miller once said about something. I know that you didn't invent that phrase, Neil, but you used it once like so beautifully. I'll tell you off air who you were talking about if you don't remember.
Oh, I think I remember.
All right. I have another question for you, Dave, Lost lore expert. Can you remind our listeners, who maybe have not rewatched the show so recently, like what we should know about the cave as expert watchers that makes like the significance of finding it here resonate throughout the rest of the series?
Yeah, the cave is where Jacob and the man in black were raised by their mother, to supposedly take over the power or protecting the power of the island. They come to odds against that when the man in black discovers humans and realizes he can harness that power for himself, turns him evil. Jacob throws him into the light source after killing him, and he becomes the smoke monster. But even though he becomes the smoke monster, the light source or whatever spits his body back out. Jacob collects it with one white stone and one black stone, and puts his mother to rest next to his brother, which are skeletons we're going to find in the caves soon. I don't know if it's next episode, but
so
it's soon.
Adam and Eve are really
Adam
the man in black and his mom.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, other storm notes I made this episode. The shot of Sun looking at Michael is cut off with Jin and features the watch. Those are the three characters that are going to kick us off next episode.
I didn't notice the watch. I thought it was super weird that his hand just like shoots into frame and you're like, what's that?
Yeah, it's to put the watch right in between the
God
two.
Yeah, because next week opens on it opens on the shot of Sun wearing not I don't know if it's the same watch, but it's a similarly gold bright watch.
Well, the like Michael has the watch because he finds it and Jin thinks he stole it, and that's why the beatdown happens next week. But I was like, what the fuck is he doing? Just like jabbing his fingers at her lips. Okay, that makes sense. All right,
gotta show off the watch.
All right, we have a couple other storm notes.
Oh, wait,
or no, go,
one,
no, yeah,
one
yours,
more.
Yes.
So this is also some of the flashbacks from Christian Shepherd, I believe the first one where we actually get to see his face actually comes off of Claire. And,
yeah.
And it's interesting that this episode introducing Christian Shepherd and the mystery of why he goes to Australia is also focused on Claire passing out for virtually no reason.
This is also in my storm notes. And my question is like, how early do you think they knew that Claire was Jack's sister? Cause that stuff doesn't come in till season two, right? I think.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I mean, I don't know the answer. That's not like a gotcha question. I don't know the answer. Like, how early did they, is it a coincidence that the Claire passing out and all the Claire stuff that's in this episode is the Christian Shepherd episode, or was it intentional? I think that should be a segment of the show. Is it a coincidence? Did they retcon it to make sense, or was it intentional all along? Who cares?
I mean, I'll always argue in favor of the retcon because I think it's funnier to tie into knots. I'm a, you know, Citadel of Crazy Town member in that way. So what if, like, so he's the Christian Shepherd body is on the island, so he knows how to manifest from that. But in terms of pulling the essence of Christian Shepherd to become him, what if that drains not only on Jack, but on Claire? Like, all the Shepherd has to kind of get leached out since they haven't had direct smoke monster contact yet to like manifest. I don't know. This goes back to something that I've been blacking out in my, I think I blacked out in my crazy person pilot notes, which I didn't know I'd be giving to people. So by all means, if you can't read it, it makes sense, which is like, what's the rules about dead bodies that the man in black can choose to like show up as?
Didn't we like talk about this? And I feel like there is no rule. Like, you don't have to have died on the island in order for it to, like, cause, as we mentioned, like, people show up. There are hallucinations. There's like ghosts. And then there's like what the man in black does. And some of them are people who died on the island and some of them aren't.
Sure. So I like every question, like I said, that apparently has no answer. I've been thinking about it. And what if it is like this energy drawing thing where it has to be like a person who has a potent memory? So that also leaves like Dave up to possibly being a hallucination
Dave
or like this manifestation.
Hurley's
crazy person later on in the series. But like when we move forward, it'll be interesting to see in this rewatch if I could hold this line of like the monster is as capable of drawing stuff out of you as it is with like the memory flashes, just like it drains you. Maybe.
What do you think, Neil?
I'm willing to believe that they planned it. Mostly because, and I think we may have even got an email about this, the astrology thing is very striking to me because obviously we're a couple episodes away from learning about Claire's past and the astrology. And then later down the line, it's like Claire's the one who figures out that the island is moving because the stars aren't where they're supposed to be. So there's just these little things that I think that they gave each character that become extremely useful later on. And it's hard for me to believe that it wasn't planned to a certain extent. Like that shot, of him seeing, Christian sort of just past Claire feels so intentional. knowing the greater context. So yeah, I think I just believe it, maybe.
You're a man of faith. I love that.
Man of faithing stuff that I know is going to happen.
Okay. A follow up question for you, Neil. When Charlie says he can't swim at the beginning of this episode, do we think he's lying here? Or did the show decide to just forget about this when it comes to the end of season three and Charlie like claims to be the swimming champ of Manchester?
Yeah.
What's the story with Charlie? Charlie don't surf. Charlie don't swim. What's the answer?
That does feel like something that the show forgets later.
Right.
But we could explain it away that this episode, you know, being all about, it really is sort of here are the people who are capable of being calm and leading. Here are the people who are not capable of being calm and like leading and acting. And they wanted to get Charlie in the latter category. So you end up with Charlie being like, I can't swim, where that could have been almost like any character at that point. You know, like it could have been Hurley that wakes up Jack and says, there's somebody out there. I can't swim. But I think they want, especially knowing that like there's a Charlie episode coming up, they're kind of building in Charlie being sort of not heroic so that he can then later have a moment. And I think they do this from time to time. And this does create some weird inconsistencies.
Some of our listeners in Slack pointed out to me also that like, there's a bunch of red shirts on the shore watching Jack do this, but like Kate and Michael are also there and make no attempt to help save either Boone or Joanna.
They pull Boone out of like ankle deep water and then Jack goes back in and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and couldn't somebody have noticed what was
Kate
happening?
With her guns out is just standing there. I'm sure you have an amazing like form in the water, Kate. I've seen your arms. Like I'm sure you could have helped. So. That's a little funky.
Yeah, it is very, it's sort of, you know, and I know that they get this great like crane shot at the end of that sequence where it's like a crane shot. It's just Jack swimming out, but it's very disorienting for two reasons. One, can no one else swim? And two, like what happened in between when Jack went back out there and came back? Like how long did he stay out there? It's very confusing as to like why he didn't.
Why Joanna had to die? It's a great question.
I mean, we get it later. She's an example. Cautionary tale. But in the moment, I don't know.
Okay. A follow-up question for Dave. We know that like at this point, the show did not necessarily plan to kill Boone. And that's a decision they made later and told the actor later. Basically, your characters are working. You gotta die. But the whole narrative around Boone eventually dying in season one is like, it's the sacrifice the island demands. That's Locke's conception of it anyway. Using that info, can we say this early near drowning experience for Boone, for poor Boone, is the island trying to claim its sacrifice early?
Ooh. I do think that the island wants to put screws down on Boone because he's weak. And I think that is going to show. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think Boone, because like he's a lifeguard, right? So it seems weird that Jack saves the lifeguard and then does, well, we don't know that about Boone yet either, I don't think.
Because that's why when he thought he was good at mouth to mouth, he was like, I'm a lifeguard.
Right.
You're like, buddy. Oh no.
So yeah, it doesn't really make sense that, you know, he's, you know, drowning so close to the shore. But yeah, I'm going to go with it just in honor of giving the island more credit than it probably deserves. Yes. The island's going to keep trying to kill Boone.
Well, see, I always interpreted it slightly differently. Like the smoke monster, the man in black, is the one sort of orchestrating this whole episode. So my thought is like, Joanna's out there, she's swimming, and she's having trouble, and Boone goes out there, and the smoke monster, man in black, / island magic, makes maybe the water rougher than it was, or like screws something up with Boone, because it's all about like getting everybody in a position, or getting Jack into a position where he's really frazzled.
Okay, wait. Let me ask this then.
Yes.
In terms of not theorizing. Did Joanna ever exist?
Yes, other red shirts knew about Joanna. There were 47
people. Yeah, she was on the manifest.
She's on the manifest. She's real.
I mean, as long as her body's on the island. I mean, Ethan's already in the mix, and they don't know about that. So, like, right? Do we have any concrete evidence that Joanna ever existed?
Yeah, because the other people, there's a whole story about her. It's like she wasn't even supposed to be on the flight.
Yeah, because Kate.
She got, you know, this happened.
An ear infection, yeah.
Yeah, Kate knows
she
about
existed.
Her.
Why wouldn't she exist? All right. Anyway, how dare you try to discredit another fellow Joanna like this? All right.
No, she had to go out in the water, and then Christian appears walking out of the water, and then Jack's all like fucking concerned about it, and then Jack wouldn't be in this entire guilt situation if he didn't lose Joanna. And Boone wouldn't have been out there for Jack to save if there wasn't this flailing person. And Charlie, who was probably high, otherwise, why wouldn't he even remember he could swim? Like, in a moment of weakness, sees this person flailing at, I don't know if Joanna exists.
That, by the way, is Kim's theory as to why Charlie says he can't swim. She's like, maybe he just took a really fat dose of heroin. And I was like, yeah. Oh, everyone knows he can't swim an hour after having the heroin. All right, so, a couple more stone notes from me. One, something that I didn't realize until I read, like, even though I just rewatched these episodes like a couple weeks ago, I didn't realize until I read the Lostopedia that the friend that he saves or tries to defend in this fight at the beginning is his friend who's in his wedding episode that we get later. Mark Silverman.
Mm.
Friend Aww. Of Jack. Mark Silverman. Lifelong friend. All right. And then Boone says we've got to go back to Jack, which is fun in the water. that's a fun thing that happens. Saeed's moment. This is what I love. When Saeed's trying to interrogate Sun and Kate's like, leave her alone. She can't understand you. And he's like, she understands me. And I'm like, he's right. Saeed's always, always right. And this is something I've noticed in the rewatch. Saeed is always right when people are lying to him. He's always right about it. No matter what.
He's the interrogator.
I know that's,
you gotta set that
I know,
up.
But like, it's not even that, like, you know, Jack's the doctor and sometimes he gets doctor shit wrong. He thinks he could save Boone and he can't. Saeed's always right. At least thus nice. Far in my rewatch. So watch for every time Saeed says he's lying. He's right. They're lying. So that's fun. All right. And then this counter scene, you know, if you're rewatching along with us, if you've seen this before, this counter, the Jack like freaking out at the airport counter comes back a lot on the show. We see it from a bunch of different people's perspectives. Ana Lucia's there, blah, blah, blah. So like, we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see him yelling
Sun,
about that.
Sun is just off to your left having a huge crisis. Yeah.
All right. Do you want to, can I, before we finish up with some emails from listeners, can I hit you with my new unified theory of Lost that I have?
Sure. What's the new unified theory of
I'm
Lost?
I'm really proud of this one. Are you ready? You know how like Locke believes in the island because the island healed him? So he's automatically like, yeah, the island
mm-hmm.
did this for me. Okay, you know how like that's what Jax does, is he heals people's spines and he made Sarah walk and that's like what he does. So like that's why Jack believes in himself. Like Locke believes in the island and Jack believes in science. He believes in himself because like he's like, I make miracles. I make people walk again. That's what I do. And Locke's like, no, that's what the island does. And Jack's like, no, science. And Locke's like, no, faith. Like that. So that's my new. I never made that like Jack makes people walk again connection before. So I was a little proud of it. No?
Yeah.
Did you get through all the episodes about his wife and not get to that?
That sounds sarcastic and shitty, so thanks.
Honestly, well, I don't know if I ever picked that one up either.
Thanks, Neil.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right.
I don't know, guys.
This is why we have to. Okay, let's spend some time on a listener unified theory. This email comes from Moriel, and Moriel writes, you were talking about the overarching theory of the good versus evil theme with Jacob versus the man in black. And I have to admit, I have a completely different take on this that I never really managed to convince my friends on. I figured I'll try to see if it makes sense to you. I think the overarching theme isn't good versus evil. It's extreme faith versus extreme pragmatism. Both are evil and both create a conflict that is pointless because both are extreme. While I have to say, I have a lot to say about the middle to end seasons, I actually loved the finale because I think it made the entire point about this concept. If you charge forward blindly, no matter which side you're on, you're creating a futile, Pointless conflict that means nothing. Goodness is a result of trying to find the balance, listening, and questioning. Here's my case. Both the Man in Black and Jacob are horrible people, and the show to me is about how both of these extremes are effectively bad. The only good is when you manage to find a balance from the beginning of their lives. Both Jacob and the Man in Black are lied to by their overprotective mother for no apparent reason. By the end of the show, the light has decent ways of protecting itself, hiding mostly, so that if the mother was honest and clear with her sons, one would imagine there might not be any problem ever. They might have had to protect it, defend it, but they seem to be able to do that in effect just fine, just as long as they're not fighting each other. Sorry, this is a quite a long email, so I'm going to skip forward a little bit to where he talks about Hurley, which is the part I really liked. Because like, in the end, like he talks about Ben and like all these people who are like both Jack's man of science and Locke's man of faith, and their like schism is too extreme and too stubborn. And then you get to Hurley. Hurley throughout the show is the only one who truly goes by life on the island, questioning things and pointing out things that make no sense, avoiding making assumptions, not falling into blind faith in either side, and being good to people. And as we hear by the end, when he ran the show, he did an actual good job. He rejected both Jacob and the Man in Black. He was the only one who could do a good job. For me, this is the magic of that show and its deep meaning. Any extreme, even when it's painted with rosy colors of goodness, is bad and causes a lot of trouble and pointless fights that mean nothing in the end. So, let me start with Dave. Dave, what do you think of this? Like, it's not about good or evil. It's about a balance in the force sort of idea of the show.
I don't mind it. The only problem is in it's arguing for an inertia in an action suspense show. So I get that philosophically it makes a lot of sense, but I'm not sure how closely you could marry it to the text before you need to start setting some borders around extreme faith and extreme pragmatism. Because, like, extreme pragmatism, once it stops being pragmatism, is about blindly rushing forward, but then at that point you've already let logic go. And extreme faith, if you actually believe it and have, like, seen or experienced a miracle, I don't think they would categorize that as blindly rushing forward. And then it also seems weird. Yeah, it seems weird to be like, I don't know. I think the Big Lebowski makes the arguments that he's talking about here. I'm not sure that Lost does.
I'm sorry, how does the Big Lebowski make this argument? Can you refresh me?
Yeah, so like the idea that you have a protagonist that is drawn into a conflict and he provides the resolution to the conflict by doing nothing sounds like arguing like a Hurley-centric version of Lost to me.
All right.
Because like Hurley would have stayed back in the Dharma thing and been a cook. He would have loved it.
Neil, what do you think?
I am for any theory that makes Hurley the hero of this story.
I agree.
So I love this.
I just recently watched the episode Trisha Tanaka is Dead, and it's maybe one of like it's one of the best Lost episodes ever. Everyone loves a Hurley episode. All right, this email comes from Jennifer, and she says, I've been listening to Star Wars Spoilers since the beginning. It's one of my favorite podcasts in the realm of pop culture. Thank you, Jennifer. I was actually pretty excited to hear you guys be covering Lost. It's overall a solid show with a lot of depth, even with all of its problems. This is my second rewatch of the show. The first was when battling a bout of mono. However, what makes it especially fun is I'm watching it with my boyfriend, a Lost virgin. Just the other day, he referred to Ethan as a random red shirt, only to be shocked to learn he was an other, and that there were others. If you can't tell, we've already zipped ahead. With nearly a decade looking back on the show, I think I've come to realize a few things about it. Most of those who complain that it went nowhere seem to have missed out on the fact that Lost is a character-driven show. As such, the plot can be secondary, hence some of the odd plot decisions. In many ways, Lost was ahead of its time. Where it was not was a traditional network television format. They had to commit to 22 to 24 episodes a season, except in the years of the writer's strikes. As a show, Lost seems to lose itself, having to fill so much time. I think it could have benefited from a tighter storyline if they only filled 12 to 15 episodes a season. So two things I want to say off of this. Number one, if you're listening and you want to email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com, your like, if you're rewatching the show with a Lost version, silly things they say, I would love to hear them. I would love to hear silly predictions or reactions that your friends watching for the first time have to the show. For example, producer Diana, who's watching it for the first time with me, asked me if Saeed was the Jon Snow of the show because he had Jon Snow's hair. And he does have Jon Snow's hair, but no, obviously Jack Shepherd is the Jon Snow of the show.
You think we got all the way through Hair Watch without making Saeed jokes, if that was the case?
And number two, I want to ask you guys, like, if you think Lost would have been an even better show.
Oh, fuck. Saeed is the Jon Snow of the show.
He dies, but he comes back wrong, and he's the
right kind of Jon Snow.
He's what Jon Snow should have been.
The shitty version from Game of Thrones.
and then, do you guys think that Lost would have been better if it had? I think if Lost were made now, it would definitely have fewer episodes in these first few seasons. Do you think that would have made the show?
They could have hired real Australians because they would have more money per episode.
What do you think? Do you think 22 episodes? I mean, 24 is just, it feels insane. Does it hurt Lost? What do you think?
I don't think so. I think that, and this, obviously, I'm very willing to be proven wrong as we go through our rewatch, but I think that's one of the interesting things about Lost is how it fills time. And it fills time with stuff that you don't think is important now, but then they can always come back and sort of loop back to it. And that's so, like, you know, you watch an episode like this and you pick out all the fun stuff that we've been doing that comes up in, you know, the next like four or five episodes. You know, there's stuff that they can do that with over multiple seasons and, you know, 10, 12 episodes later that I sort of like that. What were the shortened seasons? Were five and six the ones that were shorter?
And four.
I think it was six. Six, well, they were all a little bit shorter, but six actually aired in two parts. Yeah. Right? So it was both the batch.
It felt like it started to get a little wonky after they got away from the 22 to 25, because it's like, it's 25 in season one, 24 in season two, 23 in season three, and then it goes 14, 17, 18.
I like the 14, 17, 18. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm reserving the right to change this opinion. But as of now, like, you know, even I think I've watched a couple ahead, so I'm only like 12 episodes in. It doesn't feel like they're stalling yet. Like, it doesn't feel like they're running out of steam at any point. And maybe that's just the first season. We'll see in a couple seasons if we feel differently. But I kind of like that Lost, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, I think I've become a victim of the meta narrative of the show, which is like in season three, they asked the network if they could end it and they said yes. And so then they had an ending in mind. So that all feels a little bit more, tight to me, even if the first half of season six is also like a good example of how they could tread water, even knowing how the ending was going to be. But I do agree with what Neil's saying, which is like, even though like the challenge of these first two seasons is doing a buttload of episodes, think of how much stuff like happens in those seasons to keep the pace going. It might have been horrible for them to produce, but I think they pulled it off for two seasons.
Yeah, I think in my rewatch, I'm currently at the beginning of season four, and I love that the season four premiere is called The Beginning of the End, which is like, we've got an end in mind. Here we go. Yeah. So yeah. And then like the end of season three has so much momentum. And then I'll have to see what happens with four, five and six as I watch it. But like, I'm really excited for these like slightly shortened seasons. Cause then in theory, we won't get something like the Jack Tattoo episode. So, you know, there's that. All right. And then
that's really our unbowed, unbended.
It really is that Jack Tattoo episode. All right. And then our last email comes from Matthew, and he says, firstly, it's interesting to do a rewatch knowing that Locke never tells Jack that the island healed him. I forgot that that is true. So it's not just in this episode. It's in the show that that happens. Secondly, I wonder if you could adjudicate on the question of how much fault Jack has for Christian's death. My recollection is that Christian performs surgery drunk and Jack reports him for it. And that leads to Christian's decline and eventually him drinking himself to death. I don't remember Jack being to blame for this, but I'm sure I've seen people arguing that Jack is partly culpable in tipping Christian over the edge. So maybe I was putting the flashbacks together in the wrong order. Do you have any thoughts on this? I don't think Matthew's misremembering, but to me, that doesn't put, I would not put, I would put zero of that responsibility on Jack. We are all responsible for our own addictions. And so Jack, reporting on his father's malpractice, you know, and I think he gives his father, my memory of having just rewatched it is that I think he gives his father a chance to like take care of it more discreetly. And he doesn't. And so then he reports, you know, and Christian's like, I can drive. And then, you know, he reports him. So that's my memory.
Well,
so.
I think there's a conversation with, I think it's Anna Lucia or Sawyer or one of the drunken Christian Shepherd conversations we get in the future where he's like, I wanted to thank him for doing
that. Sawyer.
And I was never able to. All right, cool.
He's like, I could call him right now, but I can't because I'm the worst dad. Neil, how about you? Do you blame Jack at all for Christian Shepherd's death?
No, not at all.
Me neither. I blame Anna Lucia. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I think this episode makes very clear that there's something wrong between the two of them, and there obviously is, but you know, I think they do a pretty good job of Jack constantly being like, yeah, but this is how he is, this is how it you know, this is what normally happens. And even when we learn about what he how he is, you know, a part of his dad's downfall, it just feels like that moment is the end of Jack trying to help his father, you know, like it feels like this is when Jack finally reports his father. I never read that as this is the first time this has happened, or this is the first time Jack has worried about his father. Like this feels like the climax of that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And then lastly, I just want to say that like John Terry, plays Christian Shepherd. I already said this in the com, but I think he's an incredible, like, part of the show, and maybe something that we like kind of forget about because he's not a main castaway, he's a ghost and a flashback guy, but like but Christian Shepherd is like, I mean, we talked about how he's in the church at the end.
He's in the church at the end. Yeah.
Like he's so fucking important. I think I'm trying to find the info right now, but I think John Terry is made like a series regular at some point, which is crazy for a ghost. So
probably cabin season.
Cabin season maybe. But anyway, yeah, I'm excited. Ghost Dad, here we go. It's all happening.
Ghost Dad. All right. Until next week when we will be doing The House of the Rising Sun. Guys, where could people find more of your work on the internet? Let's start with Neil Miller.
You can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com on Twitter at rejects. Don't forget, you can email the show, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. That'll always get to us. And follow us on Twitter at stormofspoilers. It's fun.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me at vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. And you can listen to me talk about Big Little Lies on the podcast Still Watching.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E on my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room. This week I'm on the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast talking about Godzilla for way too long in a very long monologue. Should definitely check that out if that's your shit. And just because we're on the island doesn't mean you have anyone's permission to fall down. Please don't. Stay upright, 2019.
Don't tell me what I can't do.
Ones are in there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.